at the UFO Congress here in Laughlin, Nevada, and we have our good friend, the Alien Hunter, and you've been up all night doing TV.
Yes, sir. It's good to be here, Jerry. It's always a pleasure to do interviews with you. You're just the cream of the crop in my books.
I love that. Thank you very much. I love this cover on your new book, The Alien Hunter, The Evidence and Light. Is that your reflection in the alien, the ET's eyes there? That looks like you.
Yes, sir, it is.
I'm looking at the cover of the books, folks, and you can see that on our website as well.
Some people may think he's kind of ugly, but maybe I'm just as ugly to him. I don't know.
And we've talked over the years about you stalking these ETs. You're serious about this, you think?
That is true, sir.
And I've seen you give demonstrations. You're saying people, they don't have to be abducted if they don't want to.
I think that you can resist. I think there are ways to accelerate your resistance. My own life shows that. My events started in 1952 when I was 3.5 years old.
Yeah, in your book you have a picture of you as a little blonde-headed boy. It looked like Opie.
Well, I can't imagine that. You know, a kid being that, you know. Well, now you know why lions eat their young.
Yeah.
Perfect example.
You kind of reminded me of when I was a kid. But so that was when you had your first experience.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
And how did you realize, 3.5 is hard to remember back, I mean, when did you realize that you had been abducted?
In the event.
Oh, you did?
Yes, sir.
And what did they do to you exactly?
Well, many people, of course, go through hypnosis and various different memory recovery techniques, which is fine. But the fact is, the reason I remember my event was because I was there and I was wide awake when it happened. Me being awake and watching the entity bothered him because I was not supposed to be awake. I was supposed to be knocked out, asleep, or whatever it is they do to you. And here I am watching him, and I'm wondering, what is that? And as a little kid, now 3.5 years old, our thinking's vastly different than adults. I'm looking at the little guy, and he's about 5 foot tall. He's a little bigger than I am, so to me he's big, but he's smaller than I am now. I'm over 6 foot. But the thing is, while I'm looking at him, I am stunned that he has no clothes on. Again, I'm just 3.5 years old, just a little tyke. At 3.5 years old, this thing has got large black eyes. They're perfectly round, not the elliptical ones that you see all these people have. And to me, like, I think what we got today, the model we have today, if that's what it is a Lexus. And, you know, the kind I saw back then was a Ford. You know, it just wasn't that hot a deal. But I noticed he didn't have any mammary glands, he didn't have a belly button, he didn't have any genitalia. And this is what really stunned me. Where is his stuff? And of course, little kids, that's what, if they see somebody nude, that's the first thing you look at is, you know,
sure.
What is it? I remember the first time I ever saw my sister nude when I was a little tiny kid, and I thought she was deformed.
I mean,
what's wrong with him?
You know, right.
It didn't
right.
work. I just couldn't understand that. So the point is that...
In other words, they had nothing showing.
Nothing.
But it was nude, you're pretty sure that wasn't...
There's
uniform.
No question he did not have clothes on whatsoever.
Okay.
I just couldn't understand that as a child. But after 38 years of investigation and having some degree of understanding about the nature of biology and so on, it seems to me if you don't have mammary glands, you don't nurse. If you don't have genitalia, you don't reproduce. If you don't have a navel, you weren't born. So you got here either you were cloned, hatched, manufactured, or you got here some other way, but you didn't get here the way we do.
Have you come up with a conclusion about how they got here?
I have several conclusions, actually. One of the conclusions is that some of these guys, in my opinion, based on some good research, I think, literally are a combination of biology and actually some type of technology. Others seem to be very...
So in other words, part of them may be robotic in nature or humanoid, but still a robotic.
That only, seems to be the
case.
No,
they're not humanoid. They're, I don't know what we'll call
whatever.
Them. Ebonoid, I guess.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Something like that.
And we've dealt in great detail in some other shows. And by the way, the Daryl Sims Alien Hunter series, which has turned out to be, we have 4 shows coming up between now and the time you get to Roswell. What are you doing at Roswell this year?
Oh, good night.
And I'm going to get back to the other forums
here
in a minute.
Sure.
But,
Roswell this year, I'm putting together another group. I'm trying to bring some scientists there. I usually bring scientists or some other interesting, different points of view to presentations. So I'll have a group there for scientists for our big forum. We're also looking about going out into the desert there, Roswell. We've got a scientist who wants to go out with us to do certain kinds of tests on the area out there. And on top of that, I have, of course, my normal presentations and workshops on handwriting analysis and all kinds of fun stuff.
And you'll be able to find him, folks, in Roswell. That's actually, I'm going to be there on the 4th right on through Sunday. I don't know the official thing. I think it's the next day through Sunday.
I think so.
You're going to be there a whole week? Or
I'll be there that whole time, sir.
Yeah, right. Yes. Okay, great. Now, we're talking about the robotic ETs. What else? You said you had other theories.
Well, I actually have incidents where there's good evidence because, again, and this has nothing to do with UFO people, where the entity has actually been injured or hurt by someone that had nothing to do with UFOs or nothing to do with aliens, nothing to do with abductions, nothing whatsoever. I've had several of these reports. One of them is as of this last week that just I'm sitting there stunned listening to the story by someone who doesn't even like the subject and doesn't believe in it anyway, but it happened. But basically what they found in their incident is that that particular entity was quite biological. There was no mechanical parts, quote-unquote, in that incident.
And how did they know that? Was it bleeding or something?
The creature was actually shot.
Oh, literally?
Yes.
And what happened to it?
The incident was the story.
You
the
know where I'm going, Darrell.
Yes, of course. Of course. Of course, you have to. That you're a journalist. This is what you do. The fact is that the story that was relayed to me by a vet, they were a sniper with a spotter. Obviously, I won't give up any names or anything, but they didn't want that out. But the fact is that they were looking through what the spotter was looking. He says, "You're not going to believe this," and they see something there. And the guy gets his scope on it, looks at it. And he says, "What do you want?" He said, "Take it out." And they shot it. And the sniper took him out,
and it hurt.
It killed him. It definitely left.
Killed
it,
the ET.
Made a major mess out of him.
And does somebody have that body?
No, they did not, because it was in enemy territory, and there were a lot of enemy around the time.
This happened in combat situation.
It did happen in combat situation. And again, these people are not UFO related. We're extremely uncomfortable. I had to take. It took me 3 weeks to get the story out of these people. They just didn't want to discuss it.
Well, we only do in combat two places, so that I know of. There may be others, but Afghanistan and Iraq.
It was before that.
Okay. Okay. Well, now I can't narrow it down. So no one actually has the body, but they're credible witnesses.
Extremely credible.
Did they tell you how it reacted when it got shot? I mean,
these people are as good as it gets in the area of sniping. Uh-huh. One shot,
and it's just taken out. It just fell.
Your head is no longer in existence.
Now, you know, this book, tell me a little bit about, you know, we've talked about all the experiences, and this is a compilation of your, how long would it be now that you've been on the hunt? 20 years?
I've been on the hunt for at least 38 years.
Oh, 38, okay.
I really time the hunt from the time my son was taken. I was okay with my events, Jerry, up until the time. I mean, my events ended violently at age 17. I was elated, and I'm glad nothing else happened. Never told my wife, never told anybody else, because it's over as far as I'm concerned. Then my son at age 6 gets caught in his event, and I literally wake up at 2:30 in the morning, run into the living room. It's amazing. I knew exactly where to go. Ran into the living room, and there's my little son looking out the window in a deep trance, standing there for a long time, and I asked him what he was looking at, and he said, "The little red light." Well, this is a screen memory of the event. It's already over. They're already gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I woke up because I knew that exact feeling of my own event. When I woke up, I ran as fast as I could to get to him, and he begged me to work with him, and I didn't want to because I knew what I was going to find. And it forever altered and changed his life. By the age, going into the next year, I asked him and said, "Son, what happened to you?" I said, "You're so different. You're like you're not my little boy." He said, "Daddy, whatever they did to me," he said, "I don't even have the same morals anymore." He said, "Something happened to me." He said, "I don't know what happened, that I'm so different now." He said, I used to be so kind and considerate and other things.
In other words, it was not like the feel-good people we hear here. It was just the opposite. This was a life-altering thing, and he felt like he might be. How's your son today?
He's excellent and is leader.
Has he been able to overcome this?
Yes, he has. In fact, his abductions and his wife's abductions as well have stopped.
Yeah, well, that's great. Great news.
We're elated.
And you haven't had anything happen to you, have
nothing
you?
To me. Although I've had encounters with the entity, but not as an abductee. We took an abductee out on an expedition where I took five investigators. I trained them specifically what to do, and we took my senior investigator as bait, since he's going to get abducted anyway.
You and I talked at one time, and the show's coming up here in this series, in which we talk about that a little bit more, about where you said, I know how I'm going to bait these. So this is probably this incident.
Yes, and this is what we want to do. I mean, if they're going to get them anyway, why not just be there? If it's true, why not?
So
they actually showed up.
So what happened?
Well, in this particular case, we had a husband and wife. When we first get to Colorado, Gunnison, Colorado, is where this event occurred. Dale's going to be in a special tent with a guy in there with him. Outside that tent is going to be a man sitting there who is a trained observer. He's also an airline captain. His job is to sit there all night long with lights on to make sure we know the alien's never going to walk in front of him. But that's his job. Everybody's in special tents in a certain place.
Okay.
I picked a place where I know the aliens are going to land up on a plateau. If they come, they will come down the edge of a canyon this way back behind our tents and then go get Dale. The incredible thing is that on the last night, the last day of that event, because we check everything every morning, we all get our reports, nothing happened, absolutely nothing all week. On the last night, about 2:55 in the morning, and I found this out, we put all this together after we got our stories, but here's what happened. The entities come, they go exactly where we thought they would. They went past the first couple, the husband and wife, are in this first tent. And instantly they sit up because they something's wrong. I mean, they hear something out there walking, it's slightly making noise. They both wake up instantly, look and said, what is that? And all of a sudden they both get real dreary-eyed looking at each other, and the husband says, it's just a deer. Go back to sleep. And they both fall over and instantly hit the bed and go to sleep. They both knew that was not the case. My tent's next. Now, my tent is sitting in such a way that the light from the lanterns and everything up there by Dale's and in front of this guy, it lights this whole side of my tent. All of a sudden, something comes in front of my tent, large bulbous head, approximately 3 foot tall. I've never seen this kind of entity before because its head is so big, the tear-shaped, same thing, but the head is at least a third the size of the body. And I can't believe, and skinny little tiny body, it's a little tiny thing. And it's standing there. I can see the shadow of it on the edge of my tent. Well, the problem is, for him, in my opinion, I'm sitting there with a Cutco knife about 14 inches long, ready to move it right through the tent into him. And just because to me, he's just a toaster anyway. I'm just going to unplug the toaster. So he's standing there, and he doesn't get it. And I get to thinking, should I do this or should I let him? I think he's going to try to come in the tent. And so I decide, let's do an experiment. So I decided to see if I could still access him mentally, you know, like they do whenever they talk to you, but I want to do it on a conscious level. So I do that, and I'm amazed I can actually do that. I mean, I thought after all these years, you're forgotten, you won't know, and it probably was a dream anyway. I was actually able to access him, and I couldn't believe that I could still do that. The entity moves into the shadows back of the tent, and he starts scratching on the back of the tent. Now, I'll explain to your audience what that means. We use a term just for the fun of it called nuking a tent. Nuking a wall or a tent means they're going to do something. It's going to look like a wall or the tent, but you can walk through it.
Okay.
The reason he's scratching isn't because he's scratching the tent to alert me or anything. He didn't think I know he's out there. The problem is the people up there, the beings up there in the craft, in my opinion, are watching this show and they realize, oh my God, this guy's awake. He's got a knife or whatever. He's going to catch this guy. So the little guy scratching, he can't figure out why he can't get through the tent.
So the little guy you think is probably some sort of robotic being?
He's dumber than dirt. I mean, he's got an IQ about 80. That's why they can't even get your clothes
on. Just kind of programmed, right?
And this doesn't fit the program. He's supposed to go in and do these things, and yet now the tent's not been nuked. He can't figure it out. Finally, he leaves my area, goes over to this. We got a film producer, small-time film producer. He's there. He said, something came over and started crashing my tent. It scared me half to death. I sat up, and I felt like I should go right back to sleep. at the same time, they all gave their times. This is exactly 3 o'clock in the morning.
Hold on. We got a break coming up.
Got a break.
When we come back, we're going to find out what Daryl does. He has the knife and the E.T. being scratching on the tent. It's 3 a.m. or so. Probably cool in Colorado at that time.
Yeah,
night. Adds to your chilling nature, but you fear, like the jeans, nothing, right? Okay, so... maybe not. I think we could scare Daryl, but I'm not going to try.
Because
he has too bad of reactions. You know, we'll be right back. This is Jerry. It happened almost 60 years ago, but the debate still rages. Did an alien spacecraft crash outside Roswell, New Mexico in 1947? The most concise and complete series ever broadcast on Roswell, direct from Roswell. New programs added weekly. Check it out on the UFO Files on JerryPippin.com.
It looks like it's about 8 or 10 miles left.
The name of the book is The Alien Hunter. The name of the man is The Alien Hunter. Daryl, we left this like a soap opera or an old Saturday serial, really. But what happened? The E.T.'s outside of the tent scratching. You're still laying there pretending to be asleep.
And he moved to the next tent where the tent, I call them B-grade directors at. Scratches on the intent, scares him half to death. He falls back to sleep, and he can't figure out why he would do that.
Right.
At the same time,
did you get out and look? Or
no,
you
I wanted them all to get in the area.
Okay.
I'm hoping they're all going. There's going to be more than one, and at some point we're
so the, normally there is more than one.
Yes. In this case, we are relatively sure there are going to be at least two. They're going to come. In the other tent where Dale is at. There's a guy in there sleeping on the other side of this huge tent. He sits up. Dale sits up automatically and starts breathing, scared out of his mind. Wide awake, he knows they're here, yet nothing shows up. The other guy who's in the tent, he's scared to death because he realizes Dale knows, and he said he thinks, obviously, they're coming in, and here I am in the tent. What am I doing in the tent with this guy that's fixing to get abducted? So he's all scared. The amazing thing is the guy who's a trained observer, an airline pilot, is sitting outside the tent, doesn't know one thing's going on.
Really?
Never saw, never heard a thing. We knew this would be true. In fact, one guy said, well, why in the world did you put the trained observer out there in front when you knew they weren't going to do that?
Well, that's a good question, I thought.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
I said, because I'm not stupid. He said, what do you mean? I said, they're not going to walk in front of the guy. They're going to go through the back exactly where I wanted them to, by my tent and by the other tent, so that we'll know or have some semblance of knowledge they either came or did or were there at the time. This worked. The plan was workable.
Mm-hmm.
So the man to this day did not know anything happened other than that morning when we all made our discovery.
You had your little report. Well, what happened? I mean, did they just give up and go away?
They got out of there very quickly. Apparently somebody in the big craft was letting them know. And, of course, to me this sounds hokey. It really does. The next morning we finally told our stories. Everybody said, wow, you know, it's time to go. We all had to pack up and go anyway. We'd been here a week. We drove off down the road, got about a mile down there, and this guy hit a big rock, knocked the oil pan out of his car. So now three or four guys are working on this thing. We stop and talk to this lady who's camping very near there.
Okay.
And she says, oh, y'all were up camping up way up the canyon up there. And I said, yeah. And she says, did y'all see that UFO last night?
Oh, really?
And they called me over and said, you need to talk to this lady. And I said, what UFO? What are you talking about? What's a UFO? She's that big blue disc thing that was up there. She said, it's right there above where y'all were camped. I said, what are you talking about? Where? She points and says, right through those trees. She says, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. She described the exact
same
said,
time.
She said it was earlier than that. She said, but it left shortly after 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when we knew they had gone. But so here we have an independent witness describing and seeing this entire event from her point of view, her perspective, seeing the craft. And we're talking about actually talking and having some interaction with the entity.
That's great that happened, but what a coincidence. Or maybe you don't believe in coincidences either.
Well, the fact is we found out that this lady is an abductee.
Oh, really?
And she had no idea what we were doing or that we were UFO investigators,
mm-hmm.
or anything like that.
So is it then, is Has this been the closest encounter you've had? That's pretty close, what you had.
It's pretty close. It's the closest one I've had physically. Physically. Right. I've had two or three other encounters, even in my home, with another abductee. It turned out
we had done a show about that.
But that's further away.
Right.
This was so close that I could have reached out and literally touched him.
Now, tell me a little bit about what's in the book.
What's in the book? What's in the book is basically this book is an approach to the medical and scientific method and the police method of acquiring evidence in your own case. With this book, you don't need me. I don't like people dependent upon other people. I want people to take this book to follow the procedures in here, and if they have evidence or a case of evidence or they know somebody who has evidence, they can follow these procedures and learn how to do this stuff without me. Or you can call me, of course, and I hope they do if they do find some evidence and want it processed. But it gives the history of my own abductions, my own events, and other people's events, how I discovered fluorescence, this finger-like
trace. And we've got a show about that, people. But let's go briefly for the people listening to this show. You're saying that when these ETs touch you, they leave, it's not fingerprints, it's a smudge.
Like a fluorescent trace.
Uh-huh.
And there's different kinds, and the book goes into that in detail. Some of them are by casual contact, others are actually done on purpose, like one doctor that we worked with. And hers were not casual contact at all. They literally had symbols printed on her. Another woman, a Mandelbrot set on the inside.
A symbol? What
arm.
Kind of symbol would they
be? A Mandelbrot set was one of them.
Oh, really?
The mathematical configuration for chaos and order.
And you think because she was an intelligent woman, they did it differently? Or?
I honestly don't think that has much to do with
okay.
it. I honestly don't believe that. I've been on TV for all night, literally, and the questions asked were over and over.
What were you doing there too?
Do they want us because we're smart or dumb or whatever? And they don't seem to care whether you are genius or not. It really is irrelevant in their opinion.
Yeah, I've talked to other people and they say, well, and I've asked that question before. Well, was everybody there that was abducted in this group deal, were they all perfect specimens? And usually they say, no, they were typical people, fat people, skinny people, big people, old people. What's going on, Daryl?
It seems to me that these entities are interested in a genetic predisposition. By that I mean it's not about you. I mean they may use the illustration and convince you that you're unique, special, perfect, or whatever, in order to control you to get what they want. But the fact is, they don't really care about. They're always going to tell you in the future the big one. The big one never happens. I literally worked with a lady who was on oxygen. This was her last leg, literally. She said, please work with me. And it helped me find out why the blue man didn't tell me the truth. When I was a little girl, he said, I'm going to tell you the big one, the truth, and you're going to be enlightened. And she says, here I'm fixing to die.
And they haven't
When done. Am I going to get the truth? I said, well, and she finally looked at me and cried, and she said, they're never going to tell me, are they? I said, I don't think so. And then she died.
Do you know the truth?
The truth, to me, an alien doesn't, he wouldn't know what the truth was if it were told to it. The alien to me, there's a hierarchy that's so vastly different than what the UFO community thinks. And I think, in my opinion, that we're wrong in the UFO community to think that way. I think that the entities that we see, the little guys, and I have this information in the book, of course, but it seems to me that all these guys that we see in our experiences, the Bigfoot, all these different creatures that we're talking about, these guys all know each other, and they basically work for someone else. They're taking orders from someone else. They're not in charge of anything, nothing.
And so you're saying even though, do you buy into this deal about different types of ETs?
Oh, there are definitely different types. The question is, are they all working for the same guys or not?
And you think they are?
I think that the ones we're looking at, the seven primary ones we're looking at, the reptile and all these others, they've been seen on craft by at least eight different people at the same time, all of them. So it's kind of like, you know, if you got some cops and some mafia and some other people all in the same room planning a crime, do you think the cops are in on that? Well, by association, I would say so.
I got where you're going with that. Right. So this book is available.
It's right on my website,
and they can order it right off of your website.
Yes. We sold about 150 copies here in the last day. I just got it here yesterday, and we've already sold 150 copies.
I started to say this is fresh off the press.
We've had people buy as many as 20 and 30 at a time to give to their friends.
And now you're a man with a big reputation, and the TV people talk to you, and they ask you to do what? You were up all night. What was that about?
Oh, goodness, Jerry, that was something else. Long story short is it's an advertising firm who advertises for major cities, Las Vegas, Laughlin, yep. Phoenix, and so on. It's a commercial deal. Part of it was had to do with me doing an acting part for the advertising. The second part had to do, they said, we want to do something we'd never done before, and we're taking a risk. We want to do a UFO thing. And he said that you came recommended by the conference people as the person that we should do this with. And I said, well, I'm honored. He said, I was talking to the director at this point before I got here. And he says, we did a little test run and threw your name out there. And he said, we honestly didn't expect to get over one or two stations to actually call it. And we're talking about TV stations here.
Right.
And he said, we didn't think. He said, because we don't know who you are. We are not into UFO thing. He said, we had 30 stations lined up. He said, these people know who you are. And I said, well, I'm real surprised about that. And he said, whatever it is, he said, I don't know what it is, but the name Alien Hunter, Daryl Sams, got 30 stations. He said, we're so excited, can't understand it. He said, it's not a risk now. We got 30 customers lined up.
Right.
So we ended up about another 10 came on last night. So I was up from 2:30 in the morning to 8:30 this morning on about 40 stations across the country.
And you didn't get much sleep because I saw you down in the restaurant about 10. So.
That was probably supper.
So were these outside shots and stuff? Or
this the whole thing was shot outside on location, about five hotels from here, on the top of high areas, so, because they had their big satellite dish. They had a big, huge truck. All kinds of equipment. I mean, this was really heavy duty. They spent some money on this thing.
Well, great. And glad you were
part
of
it. And they pay well. That was the best part about it.
That's even better.
It works real well for me.
Then. Of course, nobody pays like the Jerry Pippen Show.
That's true.
We're still waiting for that check.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Daryl Sams. The name of the book, again, is The Alien Hunter and the Evidence in Lights. What do you mean by that?
The evidence you're looking for.
You're talking about
visible light, invisible light, X-ray.
Yeah, it seems as a play on that thing you discovered.
Yes, sir.
With the light, and all of a sudden you see the smears or whatever.
That is correct.
We'll be right back. Don't go on.
In March of 1997, a huge triangular ship appeared over Phoenix. Thousands saw it, and even now, years later, Phoenix is a place of UFO intrigue, sightings, experiences.
It just didn't look like anything I'd ever seen in my life.
Hear about it on The Jerry Pippen Show.